Jimmy Kimmel just got suspended by the FCC for saying something mean about Charlie Kirk, which in America, the land of the free, I'm air quoting that, is apparently grounds for exile. Meanwhile, in Canada, our regulators are too busy arguing about TikTok dances and whether a guy in a toque lip-syncing Drake counts as CanCon. So the question is, who's actually more free? The land of the free or the land of the regulated?
Welcome to Politics is Broken with Brittle Starr and Lisa B. Canadian and global politics unspun. Are you sitting comfortably? Good. Then we'll begin.
Well, hi there. Welcome back to Politics is Broken. My name is Brittle Starr.
My name is Lisa. Welcome, everybody.
Well, that's so nice of you to be welcoming like that. Because we're recording this very early for you.
We are, but I'm caffeinated, so I'm in a good mood.
second cup, you said? Is that right?
Second cup, yes.
That's smart. That's a really good idea, because it's too dangerous otherwise. I want to just start off the top here before we get into our conversation about Jimmy Kimmel and the FCC and all that kind of stuff, and if Canada is more free than the USA. Talking about our favorite people in Belize. We had a bit of a, if you've been following the show for the past little while, you probably remember us talking about the fact that we were crushing the podcast charts in Belize. And we were like, well, this is great, but what the hell?
Yeah.
Well, the mystery was solved. It was solved this past week when we heard from a documentary filmmaker who is Canadian, who loves the show, was working in Belize on a documentary, and spread the word about Politics is Broken.
Told everybody.
Made it a condition of employment to work on the documentary was to listen to Politics is Broken. So we appreciate that, and thank you very much. And hello to everyone in Belize.
Good morning, Belize. I hope you're doing well.
I liked how last week when we brought that up, the Belize thing to... There we go. Leslie M. Says, this was great. P.S. I was shooting a documentary in Belize and recommended the podcast to her local production Fixer. So I'm taking credit for at least one of your Belizean listeners. And it is Belizean.
It is Belizean? Okay, yeah. I was curious about that.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, like I've said before, love is love is love. You're Belizean, that's okay. That's totally fine.
For those that's... just listening, heavy sigh.
Heavy sigh. So as mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to be talking today about Jimmy Kimmel and how what kind of effect it's had in Canada, if Canada's comparable, just because we're right next door and it's mm-hmm. a little scary.
It is.
For those of you who don't know, who've been living under a rock perhaps, or perhaps the power went out in Belize and you don't know, Jimmy Kimmel was taken off the air indefinitely for joking, well, not even joking, as part of his monologue, he said that the MAGA group were desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them. So it was FCC Chair Brendan
Don't
Carr.
Don't get canceled.
I know. FCC Chair Brendan Carr. And FCC, of course, is the, they kind of like the CRTC in the U.S., they kind of oversee broadcasters, essentially. And Brendan Carr, who's a Trump appointee, or Trump supporter, rather, said it was some of the sickest conduct possible, which I thought, wow. Did he see a different version of the show than I saw? Anyway, I thought it was all very weird. But one of the interesting things to me, or stressful things to me, was distressing things, was the fact that it was very much political. It was very much the Trump had said back in July that he was going to get rid of Kimmel next after getting rid of Stephen Colbert, as he mm-hmm. said. He's going to go after Kimmel. And then it happened. So it's direct, I think, political interference in media and in the country that prides itself on free speech. And I don't get it. Just for some facts. Jimmy Kimmel averages about 1.7 million nightly viewers, which is down about a million, just under a million from a decade ago. So, I mean, less people are watching television in general,
yeah.
At least that type of traditional terrestrial television. Mm-hmm. But on YouTube, he's got 18 million plus subscribers, and his clips from his monologues and from the show often hit millions of views in a day.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting. Very interesting. What's your take, Lisa, on this?
There's so much. I mean, like, are we surprised? Are we surprised? Like, this was like, this was the goal. I mean, the blob said that this was the goal. It's very reminiscent. I hate that we have to say this all the time. It's very reminiscent of, you know, past political parties in the world. That basically, if you speak against the leader, like, yeah, there is no speaking against the leader, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is what we're seeing in the U.S. And it makes, I'm gonna say it makes me laugh. It's not funny, but they are so like amendment this, amendment that, but like there's conditions to those amendments. Apparently, the First Amendment, yeah, is conditional on whether or not you are agreeing. And I don't think what Kimmel said was wrong. Like, yeah, really, we saw that play out, right?
On its surface, there was nothing, you know, overly pointed about it.
No, there was no like celebratory fact of what happened. There was no commentary even about the types of messaging, I guess, that Kirk was putting out there. It was just the reality of the situation from when it first happened, and whether it was mainstream media or, you know, on the internet or whoever, like trying to pinpoint like who would do such a thing, and it must be this and it must be that. And we saw that play out in real time, where obviously it had to be an alt-left person. And then as they found out more about the individual, not so much. So I don't see what the big deal is about it.
I think it's one of the things that's interesting to me is that it was indicative of, I'll say, the majority of the population's attempts to rationalize some of the stuff that happens, mm-hmm, with the Trump administration. And that I wanted to immediately, like, what did he actually say? Because I didn't see it. What did he actually say? And truth be told, I'm not a really a huge Jimmy Kimmel fan. It's just, mm-hmm, not my style of stuff. I don't really like it that much. I think he's really good at what he does. But it's not my thing. Someone said on a TikTok this week as well, I was like, don't make me defend Jimmy Kimmel.
Please.
Exactly. But it's like, it's important to. But my point was that when the news came out that he's being suspended indefinitely, I wanted to know exactly what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you back up a step after finding out that what he said wasn't that sort of inflammatory, it wasn't that awful. It was just kind of like a thing, certainly nothing worse than you've heard elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then especially when you contrast it with the Fox and Friends Brian Kilmeade guy talking about homeless people saying, just kill them. It's like, that seems to be more inflammatory to me.
Louis wouldn't think, yeah.
So this is the weird thing I think about the majority. And I think some people would say the left. And I'm tired of the left and right thing, because I think it makes people think there's a more clear division between people than there really is.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it sound like people go to meetings and we have badges. And it's like, we don't have any of that stuff. So I'll say just because I think it is still the majority of the population are not happy with this, which is the weird part about the U.S. currently.
Right.
But I think there's a desire to make sense of what's happening. And I think we're well beyond that point now. I think we don't need to try to make sense of it. We can just take it at face value and go, that seems wrong. I'm going to guess it's wrong.
Everything... No, because like I have conversations with people and I see comments that people make on things and it's like, oh, we shouldn't politicize. But the reality of the situation is everything right now is political.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. And, you know, I've seen comments like, again, trying to justify, because there always needs to be a justification of an action, right? It's like, well, you know, what happened to, I'll make it more relatable, it happened to Don Cherry. Don Cherry got canceled. And I was like, right. But Don Cherry made racist comments. Like,
yeah,
pointing out or giving a viewpoint of what you've seen, not specifying any protected ground, because MAGA is not a protected ground. It's not, yeah, a race or anything like that. It's not the same thing, right? And people saying, you know, what happened to Roseanne? Same thing. Raging racist, right? It's very different. And so when we're talking about like talk show hosts or late night hosts or what have you, they talk about serious issues, kind of like what we do. They talk about serious issues with a hint of comedy, like they have, yeah, comedy backgrounds, right? And, yeah, so they're going to speak on topics of the day, I don't think it was as severe as certain people believe it to be. I think understanding, you know, what the blob's goal has been for the last few months, I think they just waited for something, right? Anything that they could sort of pick at and say, this is it. This is, you're now suspended indefinitely and blah, blah, blah. But I say go to YouTube.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the point, is the fact that, you know, he's got 1.7 million nightly viewers on television, and television is still incredibly powerful. I know that, we know, when I've been like guest hosting on the social on CTV here in Canada, it's a great show. It's an amazing machine. I was just bragging.
I know. I was like,
anyway, and I also went to the White House in 2016.
Yes.
But no, when I've been on the social, it's an amazing team. It's a very big operation. It's well-oiled machine. It's, the hosts are incredibly professional and everyone's great. And I genuinely mean all those things. They're all lovely. They do. And they're just total pros what they do. And I remember thinking, having done previous television stuff, well, like, how many people are watching this? Like, who cares? Like, does it really matter? And then you do the show and you find out, like, for example, the first time I was guest hosting, they promoted our merch line. And honest to God, in the first 2 hours after the show aired, we sold $2,000 worth of stuff.
Wow.
And it's like, wow, I can't do that repeatedly on social. Because of algorithms and all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting because, you know, he's only like 1.7 million nightly viewers, but of course 18 million plus subscribers on YouTube, vastly more influential on YouTube and social than television, I think. I mean, those numbers just in general, not that he's going out to every 18 million people, but or all of the 18 million people, but at the same time, he's hitting probably more people than 1.7 million people a day, I think.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's the accessibility of it, right? Like, that's the thing. I mean, I don't stay up to watch late night talk shows, right? Unfortunately, some people do, and that's fine, but I don't. So if I'm scrolling YouTube and I see, you know, little snippets or shorts or things like that, I'm still getting the material. I'm just not watching it at a prescribed time, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's that reachability that I think is more beneficial.
For sure. Going back to what we were talking about, how you kind of look to rationalize decisions like this and rationalize things like this by saying, well, what did he say? What did he actually say? And then you kind of get hung up on that, and you'd end up asking Trump, the press asked Trump, you know, what's the deal? And he essentially was cheering the fact that Kimmel had been let go, saying that, well, Kimmel had bad ratings and said a horrible thing. And of course, I mean, bad ratings, I don't know. They're not great ratings, I guess, but they're certainly half of what Stephen Colbert got, comparable to Fallon, I think. But still not, obviously not a money loser for ABC. But it was interesting because it was essentially political censorship, you know, through regulation. That was the scary part to me, was the fact that it wasn't just, you know, the ham-fisted thing of having the president say, take this guy off the air, and then he's off the air. It's the president saying, I want this guy off the air. And then the person who's actually legally in a position to do that puts the pressure on and, you know, ends up getting him taken off indefinitely, which is scary. And I think that should be really scary. And I mean, like, does that sound like free speech to you at all?
No. No, I mean, like, but that's the thing with their First Amendment, right? There's like freedom of the press and all those other kinds of things. And again, when you have somebody that is being influenced or directed to do a certain thing in a position of power by an administration, because that's legitimately what's happening, the lines are blurred, right? It does, I mean, it's meant to instill fear. That if you want to keep your job, everybody else that has a show, make sure you don't do A, B, and C, which limits their ability to freely, I guess, put out their craft, we'll say, right?
Yeah.
So anything that is restricting somebody from commentary or opinion is not free speech. And I find it ironic that in the land of the free, which is creeping here, it's free speech for me, but not for thee.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you're going to find people, this is the, beyond the social media, traditional media argument, there's the, what does it mean to Canada? What is, what's this, you know, how does this apply to Canada? Is this something that could possibly happen to Canada? People will often refer to Polyev saying he wants to defund the CBC and shut down the CBC. And some people say he's doing that for us. For lack of choice of words, censorship. And he wants to control the message because he feels that the CBC is
too woke.
Too woke, exactly, and too much on the left side of things. Whereas, of course, the CBC is, I mean, the CBC is certainly just by nature quite left, I think, in general. However, but they're not always, it's not like they're not critical of any government that's in charge. And people also connected into Bill C-11, which expanded the CRTC's oversight to streaming, forcing CanCon stuff like that, promotion and funding by streamers and stuff like that, and making platforms for Bill C-18, platforms must compensate Canadian news outlets. Now, this is all, to me, the CRTC, I'm not a huge fan of the CRTC. I'm not a big fan of Bill C-11 or Bill C-18. However, they're focused on promoting Canadian content.
Right.
And they're not focused on censoring speech and controlling exactly what's said.
Haha, but that's what people think it is, right? Yeah. Because they haven't actually read or gone through it. You know, we obviously in Canada, we have human rights legislation, we have protected grounds, and the understanding and generally what we see is that it there's not a lot of hate speech happening, right? I mean, there is, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But not on the higher levels, right?
Yeah.
And so the whole point of things like the CRTC is a little bit different because it's not so much in restricting what is said, it's in promoting Canadian content, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas the FCC seems a little bit more regulatory in their and punitive in their function. But, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with promoting Canadian content. I think how... I mean, we've seen it forever. The American content encroaches into Canada. And so a lot of the talent that exists in Canada doesn't always get the opportunity. And so if we are trying to promote from within, I don't have a problem with that.
That's the perfect place to take a break so I can go to the bathroom.
Okay.
We can also do a little ad insertion there, right there. Exactly. So I think that, you know, I'm not, CanCon got a bad rap back in the days when it was first put into place on Canadian radio. You ended up with way too much Luba. I like Luba.
I love Luba.
I know. I love, Luba's great, but Luba, like every hour, was too much Luba. It was too much. It was every time I see your picture, I cry. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, such
and a... And the Parachute song. Club.
Oh, don't, you can't compare the two of
them. Platinum Blonde. Like, these are all these are all the things. Sorry.
Lorraine Segato, is that her name?
Yeah, I'm just having a grade five flashback. Okay.
Rise up, rise up. But the CanCon thing got a bad rap initially because there was lots of rules and regulations. I think that's one of Canada's problems is that we sometimes have a tendency to overregulate things at the expense of nurturing and growing things out into the world. We're very, it becomes very insular.
Like a helicopter parent.
Yeah, like a helicopter
Canada's parent. Like a helicopter parent. Okay.
Exactly. So as mentioned, there's Bill C-11, which expands CRTC oversight to streaming, forcing CanCon promotion and funding. There's Bill C-18, where platforms must compensate Canadian news outlets, which is why you can't get news links currently on Meta properties like Facebook and stuff, Instagram, that kind of thing. Except for Threads, weirdly. You can still get it on Threads.
Oh, you can? Okay.
Yeah. Bill C-63 as a proposed bill which tackles online hate and extremism with new legal tools. So Canada seems to have a real focus of their censorships really focus on hate speech. If you're targeting a specific group or it seems like you're targeting or threatening a specific group, which I think might be the case with Don Cherry's situation where he had said, you people, and everyone went, okay, this is one too many.
You people come to this country. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, that's targeting a group of people, I think unjustly. Whether or not he should have gotten fired for it, it's not my position to say that necessarily, but I understand the reasoning behind the people who wanted to get him fired for it. You know, it's a contrast to the, you know, the U.S. uses regulation to punish critics currently, according to the FCC, yeah. Whereas Canada seems to be using it to promote its culture. But Lisa, would you trust the CRTC with your For You page on TikTok?
Yeah. I mean, there still exists algorithms, right? And mm-hmm. so you're still going to be directed in whichever way you tend to lean in terms of what you're interested in watching. I'll say this. So on TikTok, there was that, you know, 24, 36 hours where the U.S. had turned off the power, basically.
Yeah, yeah,
basically turned off the power. And it was lovely. Because then, sorry. Let me explain why. Because there was an influx of content from so many other places, right?
Yeah.
And so a lot from the UK and Europe and Australia. We had a lot of Australia content.
Yeah.
And it was kind of nice to see different perspectives, rather than just the bombardment of US content. Okay. So I would actually like to see more Canadian, mm-hmm. Especially in the political climate that we find ourselves in. I want to see more of a variation of content for Canada. And I think Canadians deserve to have their content pushed out there to other Canadians. Right? Because yeah. I don't think that happens a lot. And there's a lot of people, I'm sure, that have very important things to say that it's just not getting any reach because it's being pushed down and suppressed by everything else. So I'm not as involved in it like as you would be, right? And knowing mm-hmm. the history and you know, speaking at panels and committees and yourself.
Be invited to the White House.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Be invited to have a meeting with Prime Minister.
Being felt up by Elizabeth May.
just my face.
Just your face. Sorry. Clarify.
Nothing
just
else.
Your, no, just your face. But yeah, like I don't necessarily have an issue with it. But you know more, so you tell me your perspective.
No, I mean, I think that again, one of the issues I have with the CanCon stuff and any sort of regulation like that is the government isn't always the best decision maker when it comes to what is gonna work best and what's gonna help growth in the media industry. For example, their whole issue with TikTok, which they have said they have security concerns, but they're shutting down the TikTok office and not taking the app away from users. So the users, all the Canadians who have it on their phones and talk about top secret information all the time, I'm sure, all that stuff's still going to be there. So it seems like they don't quite understand it. And certainly from as the perspective of a social media content creator, I've had lots of dealings with the government where I think, I don't think you guys get it. I don't think mm-hmm. I think you guys are years behind what's happening currently and to our disadvantage. You know, as I've said many previous times, that I feel that like television, Canada should have saw social media platforms and said, we got to do whatever we can to greenlight this. We got to find ways to help invest in Canadian social media platforms, mm-hmm. not just for Canadians, but just ones that are based in Canada, as
right.
opposed to where the situation we have now, where we've got, Canadian politicians making announcements on Twitter still.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Carney did that recently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just the other day. It's like, what are we doing? What's that's craziness. That's insanity. Because of he's posting, you know, politicians posting messages on a platform that they have zero control over. So anything can happen with the messaging, anything can happen sure. with their facts and all that kind of stuff. And it's not great. That said, I went looking to see if I could find any examples of the CRTC or the Canadian government censoring content, like
right.
similar to the FCC in the US suspending Jimmy Kimmel indefinitely because he wasn't mourning properly.
Right.
Which is, that's the spooky part. It's like, what? That this is craziness. As David Letterman said, you know, about the whole situation with Kimmel, you know, we can all see where this is going, correct?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's like, yes, we can. I think there's a tendency for, as I said earlier, for the population to rationalize things. And they're like, well, wait a minute. I must be missing something. There must be a reason. And I think we have to wake up and go, we're not missing anything.
We need to stop asking that question because it is right in front of us. Like
yeah.
there's no hidden agenda. It is right there.
I think there's that, and there's also the aspect of, you know, whenever Shannon and I will be talking about something that's happened in the news that Trump's done or the administration's done or whatever, my tendency will be to laugh. And I kind of have to stop doing that. Mm-hmm. My tendency is to laugh because it's so ridiculous. And it's, but I'm laughing at the fact that it's like, oh dear God.
Yeah.
It's like we're driving towards an oncoming train and it's like, we should probably get out of the way. Mm-hmm. We should probably move out of the way. But everyone's like, of course we're going to, what, isn't it ridiculous that we'd be driving towards an oncoming train? So it's scary in that regard. Anyway, back to the point where I was saying, I went looking to see if there was any similar issues of the Canadian government censoring Canadian media and or media personalities. Someone's definitely going to say Don Cherry is a casualty of that. Don't believe it is, but I think that was not the Canadian government saying that. It was the broadcaster who said, we're not doing this for the fear of running afoul of hate speech. Yeah. Seems pretty cut and dry. I'm sure there's going to be people that are part of the convoy movement who are going to say, yeah, but you know, we were censored. I don't buy that argument at all either, because I watched Evan Solomon, now Minister of AI, which is really funny. I watched Evan Solomon when he was a CTV News reporter for CTV News Channel on the streets on Wellington Street in Ottawa, talking to convoy members saying, what do you want to say? What's your message? Yep. What do you want to get out? Well, you're just going to manipulate the message. And he said, listen, man, this is live. I can't manipulate anything. Whatever you say goes on the air right now. And they had nothing to say. So it's like, you're not being censored at all. You're not being censored. Anyway, all that to say, I couldn't find any examples. Like the CRTC sanctioned CHOI FM in 2004 and Radio Canada in 2022 for offensive language. But there's been no Canadian equivalent of yanking a political critic off the air. It just doesn't happen. You get to make fun of whoever you want.
Like, there's standards, right? So like, you can't say certain words on the air, right? Like those are, that's industry standards, right?
Right.
But like when we're talking about mainstream media and versus, you know, whatever else goes on, I don't see any restrictions of what is on the news, the stories that are coming out. Like, there's nobody pulling back and saying, no, you can't run that, from what I see. Because, I mean, let's be real. They're all owned by the same place, right? So they're all putting out the same stuff, whether it's written or... I just really don't think that the bills that have been put forward, despite everyone's, you know, up in arms about this is the start, I don't think wanting to have a place for Canadian content or restricting hate speech, because I think that that is an increasing concern, is necessarily a bad thing. But again, you're more in this industry, so I'm going to ask you the question. In promoting Canada or Canadian content or Canadian culture or whatever it is that we're trying to get out there, is that the same as limiting free speech for people?
I mean, I don't think so. It does feel... Sometimes it does feel like your chances of success are diminished, because if you want to have the assistance you need to succeed in creating content, creating media in Canada, you need to play by a set of rules.
Sure.
And if those rules don't jive with what it is that you want to create, then you're kind of out of luck. Mm-hmm. Then you're just swimming for yourself against this huge tidal wave of the U.S., because that's the one thing about living next to the U.S., of course, and just in general, even in the world in general, U.S. media and U.S. culture is incredibly pervasive. Is that the right word? I think so.
Yeah.
And it's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And, you know, the people that would say that we don't need help in Canada to protect our culture, to protect Canadian content creators and content in general, I think are foolhardy. Mm-hmm. Because we're playing the same game, but it's largely America's game that we're playing.
Yeah.
So we need all the help we can get. So that's fine. And I think that's a good thing. There's lots of really good examples of, you know, like your Letterkennys and stuff who get government funding. And it's like, yeah, we should do that, because it is a great show. It's a really quality show. Yeah. It would never survive just on its own in the U.S. market without some help to get started, without sort of giving people a chance to know it. So I think that's important. But I do find sometimes that the regulations dictate a bit too strongly what you should be creating. And that's not meaning like the subject matter. Mm-hmm. That's just meaning the way you're doing it, which is frustrating to me. However, that's all obviously kind of out the window when it comes to social media and YouTube, because you can kind of do whatever you want, mm-hmm. and you're a bit more equal footing as kind of, not entirely, because there's lots of incentives that American creators get that Canadian creators just aren't allowed to get yet. You know, like you would know with TikTok that people are, if you were in America, you'd be doing well with money. You'd be doing all right.
Yeah, I mean, like I'd be getting a little compensation, right? We get nothing in Canada, so.
Yeah. I remember asking someone from TikTok Canada, you know, what's the deal? Why can't we get monetized and creator fund in Canada? And he said, I ask that question every week to head office. And he said, literally, there's a spreadsheet and Canada is at the bottom of that spreadsheet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we need to protect ourselves a little bit like that. If we want to maintain Canada, we have to protect ourselves. I want to just do a quick comparison, which I thought was interesting, that we pulled up before the show of U.S. to Canada comparison. And this isn't to say that Canada's faultless. There's lots of issues with Canada, but they're few. No, I mean, it's just an interesting comparison.
They're so ours, and we will deal with them.
Exactly. Political speech on television. So the FCC punished Jimmy Kimmel for mocking MAGA/Trump. That happened in front of everyone's eyes this week. In Canada, there's no modern example of CRTC pulling a show for political critique. Just hasn't happened. As far as we know.
Okay.
Topic, hate speech laws. In the U.S., the First Amendment, the right to free speech, shields most hate speech. So you're allowed, there's no hate speech laws in the U.S. You're allowed to say whatever you want. Mm-hmm. In Canada, it's freedom of expression. And the criminal code bans hate speech and we have stricter limits in Canada. I'm not sure that's a bad thing. I think that's pretty, I feel pretty good about it.
Do they have protected grounds in the U.S.? Sorry, I just...
No, what do you mean by protected grounds?
Well, so like under human rights legislation, right? So there's charter, like in the charter, there's human rights legislation. And then it trickles down to each province has their own human rights legislation, right? That's in conjunction with the charter. But like there's protected grounds, right? So there can't be discrimination based on disability, based on gender, based on sexual identifiers, like all that kind of stuff. Those are protected grounds. And so where people feel that has been infringed on, there's processes to deal with that. I don't think they have that because I think their First Amendment just allows you to say whatever you want, right?
I don't think they do. And I think actually what's interesting is that Charlie Kirk was, of course, one of the people that said quite publicly, there are no hate speech. Hate speech doesn't exist in the U.S. It's not a thing. It just doesn't exist.
It's just speech.
It's just free speech. That's it. You don't have to like it, but you have to defend it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say... I'm reading further comparisons here. So the net effect for the comparison between the U.S. and Canada is that, you know, free, quote, air quotes, in principle, they are freedom of speech, but censored in practice. And Canada seems to be regulated in principle, but freer in practice for satire, which is interesting, which I mean is good news for us. But again, it all goes back to the social media thing of traditional media versus social media. Which I think just changes the game entirely because one of the things I was, you know, thinking about was that, you know, getting Jimmy Kimmel suspended from television, you know, it's kind of like smacking a Walkman out of someone's hands. They probably, you know, that's great, but they also don't use the Walkman as much anymore.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah. I know.
They just had the visual with the yellow Sony.
I know, with the headphones, the yellow Walkman, or the headphone the fuzzies.
Well, the foam ones, right? Because they had the little foam things that you had to put on, and then the Walkman. Anyway,
that was a Sportman, I believe, was the yellow.
Oh, was it a Sportman? I don't know. That was like my first.
That was a fancy one.
Oh, was it? Oh, look at me.
Exactly. I won a Walkman at the fall fair. Actually.
Did you?
I did. Nice. I won an amazing like $250 Iowa Walkman. They're doing the Pepsi challenge. This is just a tangent for fun. This has nothing to do with the topic, unless I get censored for this. It was the Pepsi challenge where you'd be blindfolded and you'd drink a Coke and drink a Pepsi and be like, I think I like this one better. Well, that one's Pepsi. But I was a bit of a smart ass, and I was like, I'm going to choose Coke every time. Because you can tell. You can absolutely tell the difference.
Well, yes, of course.
And I was a jerk, a little 14-year-old jerk. And so I went up and I tasted it. I was like, oh, I prefer this one here. And I knew it was Coke. And they're like, well, you chose Coke, but that does mean you get to spin the wheel. It's like, okay, great. So I spun the wheel. And it's like, spin another wheel. And I walked out with a Walkman. I was like, great. That's what I came. That's why I came to the fair. Really, doing a Walkman.
Mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. Great Walkman. Excellent bottom end. Not just me, the Walkman as well.
Do you remember they were like $300 sometimes? Like,
oh my God.
And they would only last like, they would only last about 7-8 months, and then you had to get a new one.
Because they were so mechanical. There's like, basically, it's like a Rube Goldberg machine.
Nobody knows what we're talking about.
There's some Rube Goldberg aficionados out there. God, I've never made the connection between Walkmans and Rube Goldberg contraptions. But anyway, back to traditional media versus social media. So as again, we were saying, Jimmy Kimmel has 1.7 million viewers on average for his show, but has 18 million plus subscribers and millions of views every day on his clips. So does it matter? That's my question. Does it matter the fact that he's been pulled off? What do you think? Do you think it matters at all that he's been taken off the air indefinitely?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, TV's big bucks, right? With advertising and everything, it's big bucks. And you've got like this corp that owns that corp and everybody. So it's a business. The thing with YouTube is that, and with a lot of social media now, is that you can be your own business.
Yeah.
And you can be successful at being your own business. The sad part, and like what I think about, it's not just Kimmel that's affected, right? It's the entirety of the staff. And that's a lot of people on hold or out of a job at this point, right? So it's like the thing with Trump rejoicing on, you know, we got Kimmel. But you also screwed over hundreds of other people and other families because of what, right? Because you just don't like it. But that being said, you know, I think if now understanding there's guidelines with various different platforms, I don't think what Kimmel said would have gotten pulled off a YouTube or, you know what I mean? So if they really want to have their freedom of speech, then maybe it's time for, you know, people to start looking at alternate ways of getting their messaging out. That's what that's what the alt-right started with, right? Like getting it on social media and getting it out that way.
Which is interesting because you're right. It's exactly what happened with, of course, all the conspiracy theories and all your Alex Joneses and all that kind of stuff. Using social media and YouTube and other platforms like that to disseminate their messaging and be heard past out of the clutches of regulation, I guess you could say, beyond the clutches of regulation. But it's interesting still because, in principle, it matters that Kimmel was suspended indefinitely. Mm-hmm. Because that's not a good sign. As we said, we have to stop second guessing. We have to stop looking at red flags and going, I don't know, is it more of a deep salmon? We have to be awake. Sorry.
It's a floating sardine. That's what exactly. It is.
Yeah, exactly. We have to be aware of the fact that what's happening is happening. I think people, you know, there's been things I've read this past week where people have said, the comparison between Trump and FCC doing this in the U.S. to Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert and saying he's going after Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers, which I find is really funny. I mean, I love Seth Meyers so much and he's smart. And it's like, I can understand you want to get rid of him for sure. Yeah. Why not? It makes sense with Colbert and Kimmel. But Jimmy Fallon, it makes me think it's like he's decided he's picked Jimmy Fallon and Goofy from Disney World.
Right.
That's Goofy's got to go down.
It's like kicking a puppy. You don't kick a puppy.
It's like, what are you doing? Yeah. So in principle, it's terrible. And in principle, it's awful that Kimmel was suspended indefinitely. But from a messaging and reach perspective, I don't think it really matters. And I think it's going to have the opposite effect that they think it's going to have.
Yeah, because I think for as many people that are there's an equal percentage of the population that can look at the bigger picture and go, so now they'll just pivot.
Yeah.
Right? They'll just pivot. Instead of being, you know, on a big stage with the fancy suits, they can be in their sweatpants and you know, basically doing it from home, right? You're not gonna employ as many people, but it's not gonna prohibit the message from getting out.
Sure.
Right.
I mean, and at the same time, there's nothing, like, that's one of the interesting things about YouTube to me and all the other platforms is that there's nothing really stopping anyone who's got the means, meaning the money and the ability and the skills and the people, to just do the exact same show. Like, mm-hmm. there's no reason why Jimmy Kimmel, who has billions of dollars, can't run the exact same show and get his own advertisers. You know what I mean? Maybe it'd be an uphill battle. It might be tough. It might be as easy as getting paid by the network, but it's just a business.
Well, and I mean, in terms of advertising, again, we're looking at what conglomerate owns what conglomerate and how they're being influenced, right? Mm-hmm. But even a small-time creator can make a few pennies on YouTube, sure. right? So if you have the means, to put forward a show, right? Like, it doesn't have to be obviously as fancy. But like, are we, because generally speaking, the Kimmels and the, I don't even want to say Fallons, but it's, their monologues are basically what a YouTuber does now, right? Like, their monologue, yeah. they come out, like, forget the guests and stuff, but their monologue, they come out and they give their little, you know, synopsis of the week, the day, whatever it is, with their opinion thrown in. So, like, are the talk show hosts just really fancy YouTubers, like, in better clothes? Because, like,
yeah,
I know you're not wearing pants right now. So, no. like, you know what I mean?
For those of you who are just listening, Lisa and I are separated by provinces.
Many provinces.
Many provinces currently. Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting thing. There's a piece of trivia here, which is Jimmy Fallon's Wheel of Musical Impressions clip. One of his clips got 170 million views. And TV can't compete with that at all. Younger audiences watch 3-minute clips at, you know, 9 a.m. on the way to work or school or whatever. They don't really watch the full shows at midnight. The concerning part, my point of saying this is that it's terrible that Kimmel and Colbert were pulled off television. Mm-hmm. However, they currently and still do have access to platforms that are going to make them reach way more, if the same, if not way more people.
Yeah.
And their messages will not be constrained. The scary part is all the tech bros that are cozying up to the Trump administration, because those guys are the guys who control the algorithms. And, you know, pulling a show off a broadcast is less powerful than an algorithm hiding a clip. So if these guys feel the squeeze at some point in time, and there's no reason to think they won't. Mm-hmm. If Disney's bending a knee, and Disney has no reason to bend a knee. If Disney's bending a knee, then there's no reason to think that Zuckerberg's not going to bend a knee. Or, for to be more precise, he's not in charge of anything. You know, he's Meta in general, or Musk or whatever. There's no reason to think that those guys aren't going to be like, okay, well, whatever messaging you want, that's the message we're going to push. That's the scary part.
But don't we see that, though? Like, I mean, I don't often go on the Twitters. But when I do, and I just do a fast scroll, there's certain messaging that gets put out there a lot faster.
Yeah,
than
yeah, for sure.
Right.
I think it's messaging that elicits response.
Yeah.
And that's awful, but at least we know that that's based on bottom line currently.
Well, business, right? Everything's a business.
Yeah, exactly. Which is scary. Yeah, I'm hoping that we don't get to that point, but at the same time, I'm not sure how we get out of it. Like, this was the question of the past few weeks, I think, for me, has been like, how does the U.S. get out of this? I saw someone saying yesterday online that they think it's going to take at least a generation for the U.S. to regain the freedoms they've lost in the past 9 months, which is crazy.
It says something, because as I obviously am scrolling through things, it says something when you have Ted Cruz providing a cautionary tale on what happened to Kimmel. And I'll give him credit, because not often does he have insight, but I'll give Cruz credit that he basically, and I'll paraphrase, said, if we're doing it to them, they're going to do it to us, right?
Yeah.
Meaning if there's a Democrats get in, then they could just as easily flip the switch and restrict other people's speech. And that is, I've gotten some pushback on some of my opinions lately, in that I don't agree or align with anything that a lot of alt-right people sure. like Mr. Kirk say. And I think there needs to be consequence, and I think there needs to be, you know, changes of opinions and things like that. But if I was to say that this person, again, in the U.S., has nothing to do with Canada, but in the U.S., can't say it, should be banned from saying it, if we take it to Canada and a lot of the, you know, like separatist talk and things like that, if I was to say that people can't talk about it or should be canceled for talking about it, that could just as easily be pointed my way, right?
Yeah.
So we don't have to like it, but I think in a weird way, it's almost beneficial to be exposed to it, because then you know what you have to kind of battle against, right? In order to move us forward in life. But that's just my opinion. It's been a
rough
week.
Say that about the first thing that springs to mind is Rebel News, Rebel Media.
Sorry there.
I don't want to get a lawsuit.
Yeah. I think people would say Rebel Media has been discriminated against. Now, of course, I think it's for reasons that are unrelated to their viewpoints and related rather more leaning towards the hate speech idea.
100%. 100%.
Like they're running afoul of the law or will run afoul of the law. So that's the reasoning as opposed to anything else, any discourse or whatever. I mean, there's your Ben Mulroney's who are out there doing lots of conservative talking points and representing, quote, the right, whatever that is.
Yeah.
So there's no discrimination there, but.
No, I mean, he just got a spot on, you know.
The West Block.
The West Block, and he's going to become, like, the thing is that if places like Rebel, and I'm not going to call them journalists, but if places like Rebel had free reign, the hate speech would be much more obvious, right? Like they still have to keep it a bit subversive. Anybody that, you know, watches or knows, like you can hear what they're saying and you're like, okay, this is what they're talking about, but they can't come right out and say a lot of stuff. Right.
Right.
But you know, when Ben was announced as covering the West Block, I did, you know, some Googling and listened to some of his radio show. And it was painful. But, you know, he said some things that, like, is pretty racist, right?
Oh, yeah,
but he
sure.
still is allowed to say it.
Yeah.
And then, again, like anything, you know, you deal with the fallout and the consequence of that. But I don't think in Canada whether you're a mainstream media, when you're putting out your YouTubes, whether you have a page, I don't think there's restrictions. I know people like to use that as a like, oh, they're hiding and they don't want us to, but I don't think there are restrictions.
I agree with you. And I think that there's, which brings us back to the theme of the show, is Canada freer? Is Canada more free than the USA?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're more regulated in that we are trying to protect groups of people from being unjustly targeted, which I think is a good thing for a society to do, because there's nothing good that comes from that. But in general, I think that we are currently, anyway, as of this week, a little more free.
What time is it? I think we are a little bit more free.
Yeah.
But you have the people that, like, you know, you have the Polyevs and you have the Danielle Smiths and you have everybody that speaks on the threat of freedom of speech, even though we don't have that here, I think is a scare tactic, right?
Yeah.
It's not like, I think about, what was the guy? Oh God, I can't remember his name. Anyhow, one of them that made like really crude comments about Trudeau's daughter when they went to a movie and stuff like right?
Yeah.
Like that, like you were able to say that and it had reach and people saw it. You got backlash for it. But you were still able to see it. So I don't feel like there is this suppression on the part of the government, which is their narrative a lot of the time. I think they just like to play that for their own benefit. Anyhow.
I'm just going to turn my phone on airplane mode just in case it was me.
Was it me?
And it was a little crackling in the background there.
Okay.
I think, you know, there's lots of things that people like Polyev and that side of the spectrum say that I vehemently disagree with, and I think it's bad in general. But I'm not going to, as you know, I've heard Voltaire quoted more this week than I've ever heard in my life.
Funny how educated people get when there are things happening.
But that whole idea of, you know, I to paraphrase, I hate what you say, but I defend to the death your right to say it. And I kind of agree with that, in that I think I don't like what Pollyanna has to say and people on that same end of the spectrum. However, I think it'd be terrible if they were restricted from saying it.
100%. I think
that's not a good thing. No. I think you need to kind of pull this stuff out into the light sometimes so that it can be, there can be some backlash. There can be some, and I mean like conversational backlash.
Yeah.
Because political violence doesn't solve anything at all.
No, and it's not that. It's like back in the day in politics, like you only saw or read what a politician said in a moment. You didn't really necessarily know anything more than what was presented to you. Now, with Twitters, they're putting out messaging all the time, right? And so you really get to, I think, kind of get know the people a little bit more than what we did in the past.
Yeah.
And really what they stand for. And then you can make a decision on a broader scale, whether that's where you're going to lean or whether you're going to look elsewhere and see if something else matches your ideology and your, you know, opinions on things. So, like, again, I don't like the things that Polyev says. I don't like the things, a lot of things that a lot of people say. But I can't, in good conscience, say they should be stricted in what they're saying. Because again, what if somebody turned that on me, right? So
yeah,
I agree with Ted Cruz.
I know. That was so horrible. I was listening to that interview with him where he was talking about how it was not a good thing and a good sign for this to be happening to Jimmy Kimmel. And to, as you know, to Ted Cruz's credit as well, he was saying, this guy's Kimmel's mocked me mercilessly over the years. And it's like, yeah, absolutely. But it's also, I feel weirdly uncomfortable. Not weird. I feel absolutely unweirdly, complete reasonably uncomfortable to be on the same side as Ted Cruz on this. Mm-hmm. But it's good because I think I want someone to have that angle from that perspective to say this isn't good, because it's I think his argument is not entirely accurate, that the if a Democrat government got in, they would restrict the right of the right. But maybe, I mean, he's got a good point. I think it's a good line to say that we can't do this.
That's why I'll give him credit for the insight, because
yeah,
would it happen? I don't know, but just that he's thinking that, hey, hold on, if we're pushing this button, that could easily be put back
goes
on
the other
us,
way,
right?
Exactly.
So I'm gonna put $20 on, when did he say it, a couple days ago, that he's gonna be on the outs. He's gonna be the next one canceled by
exactly
the
yeah. Yeah, we get rid of Seth Meyers, Fallon, and
Cruz. We're gonna send Cruz back to Canada. Exactly. Get rid of him.
So we'll close out here. So who's actually more free? In the U.S. you can almost say anything until the government decides you can't, apparently, and hey, make sure you're mourning appropriately. In Canada, we've got more rules about hate speech, CanCon, even TikTok. But those rules aren't or haven't been political weapons to date. Our risk is that it's mission creep, which is a term I just learned this week, which is exciting. This whole idea, I think, as our producer Owen said, it's the Trojan horse thing. Or as I made it more eloquent, the vacant equine. The old vacant equine.
The barren donkey.
But our our risk is mission creep, of course. It's stopping things before we're enjoying the same level of freedoms as the United States, which is to say, less freedoms. The risk is outright censorship, but I think the answer who's actually more free is currently Canada. Who knew, eh? So there you go. So thanks so much for watching and or listening to Politics is Broken. Of course, you can find us on your favorite podcasting platform. You can find us at brittlestar.com. And if you have comments, feel free to leave them. We got lots of wonderful comments last week. But I don't think we're allowed to read any of them, even though we have an explicit rating.
Oh my, I'm going to have to go check.
But we do appreciate the comments. We do appreciate the support, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care. We have an email. Oh, well, yeah, we have an email, says our producer. And our email is politicsisbrokenpodcast@gmail.com. politicsisbrokenpodcast@gmail.com.
No dick pics, please.
Unless your name's Dick. Then if you want to send a selfie of yourself, hey, that's nice. I don't know why you would, but that's totally fine.
I'm not the one opening the email. Do what you got to do.
Don't encourage. I would like
freedom.
To censor that.
Freedom!
I would like to censor that speech. Thanks so much, everyone. Take care. See ya.
Bye, everybody. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Politics is Broken with Brittle Starr and Lisa B. The audio version of this podcast is produced by Owen Reynolds for the Podcast is Broken Network. Remember to like, follow, subscribe, and comment. And don't forget to check out RiddleStarr.com for more.